This is Beyond Words with Dr. William Campbell, awakening the world to the power of God's Word. And now here is your host, Dr. William Campbell.
We're so grateful you're with us this morning as we have a wonderful program, which I'm titling, Never Say Impossible. A few months ago, I watched a movie, didn't know much about it. It was titled Temple Grandin. As I watched this movie, I was so deeply touched, literally moved to tears. I took a walk outside for half an hour and said, why am I telling God and myself that things in this world are impossible? Temple's story is definitely worth retelling. If you've not seen the movie, you really need to pick it up. You can find it in your video store. But we have Temple with us, and there's nothing better than having the real thing. Temple, thank you for joining us this morning.
Great to be here.
And Temple, before I introduce you just a little more and we begin our interview, I'd like also to mention we have Caroline Long with us. Caroline is the founder and director of a local ministry for autistic children. We had them on a few months back. The Girard House is the name of the ministry, and we're grateful that you're with us, Caroline.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, Caroline may have some questions for you, Temple. She's raising two autistic children, has a whole ministry here in town to that effect. And so, Temple, a lot of people listening may not know very much at all about autism. Would you mind saying a few words of, you know, what is autism?
Autism is a developmental disorder with a lot of a genetic basis where the brain doesn't develop normally. It varies from very severe, where the child will never learn to talk and will have to live in a supervised living situation for the rest of his life, to a lot of people out in Silicon Valley, kind of the geeks and the nerds. Einstein would probably be labeled autistic today because he had no speech until age three. Steve Jobs had a lot of autistic traits. Because what happens in the milder end of the spectrum, or the Asperger's end of the spectrum, is, well, there's some social circuits in the brain that just don't get hooked up. But oftentimes these kids are extremely intelligent. And so it's a very, very big spectrum going from, you know, people that are kind of geeky and nerdy, like the guys that are good at programming computers, they're infatuated with history or whatever their favorite subject is, to somebody that may have epilepsy and be nonverbal and have be very, very handicapped. It's a very, very broad spectrum.
Mm. And Temple, where did you fall in that spectrum?
Well, when I was a young child, I was real severe. I had no language until age three and a half, but I did not have epilepsy, so that definitely improved the prognosis. Mm. And I was very lucky to get very good early educational intervention. I had a lot of hours of one-to-one teaching. I can't emphasize enough that if you have a young child that's 2 to 3 years old, and they're rocking, and they're not talking, and they're just, doing a lot of repetitive behavior, the worst thing you can do is nothing. You've got to start working with this child, and the research is very clear. You need 20 or 30 hours a week of one-to-one teaching. Now, if you're in a situation where you can't get services, you need to get some volunteers. Grandmothers are often good. You work with a kid teaching speech, teaching turn-taking. Because the worst thing you could do with this young child is just let him sit there and rock all day.
Yes. Temple, your story is so fascinating. And part of it is woven around your incredible mother. Can you say a word about her and
well,
what she meant to you?
Well, she had to fight keep me out of an institution because in the 50s, kids that were three and a half years old that didn't talk, they just put in institutions. Now, you have a lot of individuals that are milder Asperger's, and those kids usually have no speech delay. They're the kids that are just kind of geeky and nerdy, and when they're in third or fourth grade, they don't have many friends. And one of the best ways for them to get friends is shared activities, like the school play, going into band, art club, Boy Scouts, robotics clubs, chess club, any kind of shared interest, you know, a church group. These are the places where they can get friends, where they have, pals that like to do the same things together.
Yes, yes. Temple, with your mom's help and your incredible determination, you went through many obstacles in what seemed like an impossible pathway into a woman with a PhD who's written several books, who's appeared on primetime television, on practically every network. Temple, you're out advocating, speaking publicly. you've got to give us a clue here, because the average person who doesn't have autism does not have these kind of breakthroughs.
It's a lot of hard work. Nothing was easy. People are looking for single big breakthroughs. There is no single a big breakthrough. In fact, there's a wonderful little book about my life written by Cy Montgomery.
Mm-hmm.
It's a biography. It's a, you know, written at about a fifth or sixth grade level. It's got lots of pictures of my projects. And it's a really good book for, you know, for kids to read about autism. And it's got wonderful pictures in it. It's called Temple Grandin, and it's by Cy Montgomery.
Cy Montgomery.
Amazon's got it. It comes right up on Amazon.
Temple, I'm going to just give a minute again back to Caroline. She has two autistic children. And Caroline, what would you like to ask Temple most or comment on as we're getting just in the start here of our interview?
Well, we are just truly inspired by you, Temple, and all the work, like you say, the hard work that you've done. I did a lot of that same hard work with my children, and I admire your mother having to go through what she went through in the 50s, knowing how hard it was for me to go through this. And
well, there were no support groups in the 50s. Yeah. I mean, she was totally winging it on her own.
I can only imagine, because I felt really, alone. And my son was born in 2000, so just 9 years ago when I was going through all of this, I can't imagine what your mother went through. And so we've started the St. Gerard House with the same kind of passion that these children need early intervention.
Oh, early intervention is so important. I mean, the research is very clear, and you could have kids that are 2, 3, 4 years old that look really severe, and provided they don't have epilepsy, if you work on them really hard, you can pull about half of them into a normal first grade. I'm not going to say they're cured, but they're still autistic, but they'll be able to function in normal first grade if they get the right supports. And you know, the worst thing you can do is if you let the kids sit there and rock all day, they shut the world out.
Yeah, that's exactly what we say. You got to get in there and you got to fight. And we do everything from applied behavior analysis, one-on-one, 35 hours a week with the kids that come into our school. And
good.
Just a lot of the cleaning up their diets and
Some of the diet stuff, the wheat-free, the dairy-free, sometimes that really helps some of these kids. So does omega-3 fish oil. Helps a lot of kids.
Yeah, we do a lot of that stuff as well. And there's lots of different ways, like you say, there's not one thing there's not a magic bullet.
No. It's a lot of hard work. And you also have to be aware of the sensory issues. Like you might have a child that every time you go into Walmart, he just throws a fit.
Yes.
That's because he feels like he's inside the speaker at the Brock concert, and they just get sensory bombarded. Some kids' loud sounds are bad. Other kids can't tolerate fluorescent lights. It's because there's problems with the sensory system, and boy, I wish they'd do research on this to work on better treatments and things for these sensory problems.
Temple, the Gerard House is wonderful because the way it's designed takes all that into account.
Good.
Yeah, it's really something. Temple, as I was talking to you some this morning before we went on the program, you mentioned how, above all things, I just sense this even in your voice, you have a passion to help children with autism or other reasons that they seem to be held back from success to believe they can do more. Can you say a word about that?
Yeah, well, you first of all, develop the strengths. I'm a visual thinker, so I was extremely good at art. When I was in third and fourth grade, my ability in art was really encouraged. But when I was a little kid, I just wanted to draw horse heads all the time. Well, I wouldn't have been designing cattle facilities if horse heads was the only thing I was drawing. So they always encouraged me to draw other things. You know, in fact, my mother encouraged me to do a watercolor of a beach, and she put it in a real professional frame. You know, you've got to learn how to use that skill to do something that somebody else wants. So if a kid's just doing the same cartoon character over and over and over again, then you want to say, well, let's say he likes Mickey Mouse. Well, let's do Mickey Mouse's house. Let's do his car. You see how I'm making an associative link back to Mickey?
Yes.
Or whatever the character is that, you know, SpongeBob or whatever that the kid really likes.
Yes.
It's you want to broaden it out. If he's fixated on racing cars or NASCAR or something like that, well, then let's draw a picture of where the driver lives. What town does the driver live in? Let's learn more about the town where that race car driver lives.
Mm-hmm.
See how I'm making an associative link. You want to tap into the tremendous motivation that they have on their fixations. And that's one of the things that made me keep going, even after the cowboys at Scottsdale Feed Yard had put bull testicles all over my car.
Yeah, so Temple, was most of that movie real to life? Was much of it exaggerated? Tell us your opinion on that.
They did a really great job, and you have to remember that it's a two-hour movie, so they have to change some events around. The things that are absolutely correct are the way it shows my visual thinking. That's correct.
Mm.
The sensory problems and the anxiety, how it shows autism, is correct. All the projects, like the gate that opens up from the car, the optical illusion room, the squeeze machine, the dip vat, all those projects I did, those were done off original drawings and photos. Mother, my science teacher, and Anne at the ranch were all very nicely depicted. There were some things they had to compress, move around, and change, but everything was like true to the character.
Well, that's fantastic. Temple, do you mind explaining to us more about how your mind works and wrap it around how it is that, amazingly, you have helped revolutionize the whole cattle industry? But tell us about some. Many people listening have not yet seen the movie, and I hope everybody will and will get the book as well. But Temple, tell us how it is that you got down your hands and knees and walked through the pathway that the cattle would trot.
And I started out in the feed yards in Arizona, and Scottsdale Feed Yard was one of them. And I have to say, there were other people in the cattle industry that were nice. There was Ted Gilbert down at the Red River Feed Yard, and he always treated me really well. And I'm a visual thinker, so I don't think in words. When I talk about things, I kind of narrate the pictures in my mind. And I didn't know that other people didn't think of pictures. I thought everybody thought the same way that I think. So when I noticed the cattle were, you know, refused to go through the chute for vaccinations, they'd balk at a shadow. They'd balk at a rope hanging across the chute. And then they would just get out an electric prod and poke them harder and scream at them. And I noticed that we need to look at the things that the cattle are seeing. And when I first started doing that back in the early 70s, that was like looked at like, oh, this is really weird. Why would you pay any attention to what cattle are seeing? But it just seemed so obvious to me. So I'd get down the chutes, and the movie shows that really nicely. And the movie, by the way, is titled Temple Grandin.
Mm-hmm.
Cy Montgomery's book is also titled Temple Grandin. But they other people, when you think more words, hadn't thought to just look at what cattle were seeing. And that was some of the first work I'd ever done.
And as you part of the movie shows you after you're going hands and knees through the tunnels and tubes, and you went back on your own and completely designed a system based on your incredible visual memory. You remembered everywhere you'd been, and you
what
could just...
What I did is I went to about 25 feed yards in Arizona, and I got almost all of them. Went to about 10 feed yards in Texas, and I worked cattle. And I just looked at all the different systems, and I basically collected all the good bits. And I photographed every system, and I made drawings of it. And then when I developed my system for the dip vat, I took all the good ideas and put them together and tried to chuck out the bad ideas. It took a lot of time to do this. It wasn't, you know, like magic. You have to develop talents. That's why my employment book is called Developing Talents, because you've got to build on, a visual thinker. Algebra was just impossible. And one mistake that was made with me was we didn't go to geometry and trig. And that was a gigantic mistake, because I'm finding a lot of people that can't do algebra and they can do geometry just fine. And the visual thinkers often have trouble with algebra. Let's go to geometry. And then there's another kind of mind in autism, and that's what I call the pattern mind. This is the mathematician. This is the kid that maybe when he's in third or fourth grade, he's a little math genius, but he's having trouble with reading. And if he's a little math genius, then what you need to do is give him the high school math book if he can do it. And then a third type of mind that's on the autism spectrum is the word thinker. This is the kid that's, they're not that good at drawing, their math skills are average, but they love a subject like history, or they love movies, and they'll tell you every fact about every single movie, and they're more of a word thinker. So we need to take and build up on the things that the child's good at and turn them into careers, because when these kids get older, they need to be learning work skills. And boy, I can tell you, on the high end of the spectrum, if there's paper routes around, I'd put these kids on paper routes. They need to learn the discipline of that paper route. And if there's no paper routes, well, then they could mow lawns, they could do gardening for people, they could walk their dogs, run a computer repair business, sell greeting cards, maintain the church website, and that could be their job. You know, and the computer kids would be really good at that.
Even as you're talking, Carolyn Long here with us on this interview is smiling and shaking her head. But do you want to comment on this, on all the different ways that brains are impacted by autism?
It is. It's fascinating to me. I think of my own two children who could not be more different. And one of them has one of the brains that you were speaking of, and one of them has the other one. And you can't approach any of it the same way. And the children that we work with in the Grotto School at St. Gerard House are the same way. We've got some brilliant 4- and 5-year-olds that we know are just brilliant kids. And we're getting them out of their shells, and they're talking, and they're communicating beautifully. And it fascinates me, and I love it, because every turn and every little window that you get a chance to peek through, you unveil some just beautiful child that is waiting.
Well, that's what we got to do. The one thing that's universal between the types is they're a bottom-up thinker rather than top-down. And what that means is that all concepts are learned by specific example. Like, how did I learn that a dog wasn't a cat? Well, I take all the pictures of individual dogs and put them in the dog file, and the cats in the cat file. And how about a more abstract concept, like being polite? Well, you say thank you after you buy your hamburger at McDonald's. You, you say thank you if someone holds a door open for you. In other words, just teach it out in the real world by specific example. Like, for example, if a child makes a social mistake, don't scream at him. You might say, well, you can only touch the merchandise that you're going to buy. You just give the instruction. And I'm seeing too many of these kids on the higher end of the autism spectrum where they're getting kind of a handicapped mentality. They're sort of just going, oh, poor little Aspie, he will order his food for him, or he doesn't have to learn how to shop or learn table manners.
Oh, and we definitely make them do it over and over and over again.
Good. And they need to do it over and over. You're doing the right thing.
And if manners, I always laugh because I have to teach my kids how to do everything. Manners are definitely easy to teach. And absolutely, it'll pave a way for them that...
Absolutely, absolutely. Because being a child of the 50s, all kids, they pounded the manners in.
Yeah.
And that was very, very helpful to me. I mean, we had formal Sunday dinner at Granny's, and I had to sit there and have manners. Now, I was allowed to leave after 20 minutes, but if I left after 20 minutes and dessert wasn't served, well, then I didn't get dessert. If I wanted the dessert, I had to wait.
Yeah.
If you're just tuning in, we have with us Temple Grandin. There's a movie out with her name attached as a title, an award-winning movie, many books. She's been interviewed in networks all over the world. Professor at Colorado State University, a world-renowned designer of livestock facilities. Temple grew up severely autistic, and she is one of the world's experts, really, on this topic and speaks much on it. And so stay with us here as we continue. Temple, I want to just do a little turn here and ask you to talk to people about the squeeze machine. What is it? It's so fascinating. And I understand that these days you're taking human hugs now, but go ahead, tell us a little more. It helps us to understand.
When I got into puberty, I started having horrible anxiety and panic attacks. And as I went through my 20s, and my panic attacks got worse and worse and worse. And when I was out at my aunt's ranch, I watched cattle going in the squeeze chute. And they show this in the movie. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that when they put the cattle in the squeeze chute for their vaccinations, sometimes they kind of relax. So I tried out the cattle squeeze chute. And I found that the pressure relaxed me. So then I built a device I could get into that applies pressure. Some kids on the autism spectrum are pressure responders. They're going to want to get under heavy blankets. They like to jam themselves into little small places. And other kids are not pressure responders. But for some individuals, deep pressure is very, very calming. I also want to add on the anxiety attacks. As I went through my 20s, and they got worse and worse and worse, I finally got them under control with a small dose of antidepressant medication. And I can't emphasize enough the importance of proper use of medication. A little bit of antidepressant medication really helped me. I have another book called Stop Way I See It. And in the second edition, it has to be the second edition, the 2011, I talk about medication. There's way too many medications given out to little kids like candy. I think it's just horrible. But there is a place, for careful use of medication in some older individuals. Not all of them, but some of them.
Okay. That's very helpful, because I think you're right, not just around autism, but for many different reasons, we over-medicate people in general, and yet we shouldn't go to the other extreme and just drop.
And I know us visual thinkers, we tend to be nervous. And I know a lot of visual thinkers working in the meat industry. I've worked with a lot of other designers, you know, that lay out these great big huge plants. And many of these people are taking Prozac. And it's really helped them to stay off of drugs and alcohol. But you need to use very low doses. The mistake the doctors make is they overdose them. And if you overdose them, then you get agitation and insomnia. And too often they're raising doses when they ought to be lowering them. And that's covered in detail in The Way I See It, second edition.
Okay, second edition.
It has to be second edition. The first edition doesn't have any medication stuff.
Okay. Temple, it's amazing to me how you have progressed, you know, not just the PhD, but in all of your writing and in your research. Have you found writing to come easily for you?
I was a good writer. I had a little reading. I got off to a rocky start. When I was in third grade, we were using those Dick and Jane books. I thought they were horrible. And mother taught me to read with phonics. But I want to emphasize, phonics doesn't work for all autistic kids. It's other autistic kids where whole word is how they're going to learn. They're going to just start memorizing whole words. And then you have to teach words like in, over, and on with specific examples. Like, you lie down on the bed. You walk down the stairs. You walk down a hill. You set the book down on the table. In other words, you use specific examples. Then my reading just took off. And then my writing, the way I was taught writing, and they don't do this as much in a lot of schools today, is I'd write a composition, the teacher would red mark it up, and then I'd have to correct it. You know, basically I'd teach a copy editing my work. I didn't learn by diagramming sentences. That made no sense to me. I learned by just having my work red marked up by the teacher acting as an editor, and then I have to correct it, and that's how I learned. And I learned a lot from my book editors, too, on organization, because I was bad at that. You know, because since I'm a visual thinker, I tend to ramble. There's a tendency for people on the spectrum to ramble. And the way that I stopped doing that was making outlines and have no more than maybe one single space page before I go to another outline heading.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I know that socialization is difficult for probably anyone with autism, and yet you're speaking publicly all over the place, and
you know, my very first talk I did in graduate school, I panicked and I walked out. And when I started first doing my cattle talks, I was real nervous. But the thing that saved my cattle talks in the beginning is I had fabulous slides. I worked hard on my slides. And I had slides that showed all the things that the cattle were afraid of, the shadows. I showed good designs, bad designs, and having really fantastic slides helps you, because if you freeze, you can just get stuff off of your slides. Like I tell my students when they do their first animal science paper, a little 10-minute presentation on their research, I make sure their PowerPoint slides are really good. I said, if you panic, you can read the slides. On a first presentation, that's not the end of the world. Just don't sweat it.
This is encouraging for all of us, Temple, because most people are more afraid of public speaking than either even something like a spread of an epidemic or a nuclear holocaust. I mean, it's just
really good slides, I would recommend. And if you have to do a talk, because I know in church you don't use slides, then what I would have to have is I have to have a list of the things I'm going to discuss in notes. I don't have to read those notes, but I need to, like my autism talk, for example, okay, start out early intervention, then sensory problems, vision, auditory, touch. Then the types of minds, visual, mathematics, word, and I would have a list like that, and then I'd go down the list. Otherwise, I would ramble.
Okay.
I'm better now able to handle doing a talk without slides. When I was younger, I'd be panicking without slides.
Temple, I have a question for you. So now my children are 11 and 10. I have a boy and a girl. And in our school that we have at St. George House, our children are 3, 4, and 5 years old, and I'm trying to implement small group instruction and things like that in our school that my children didn't get, because I feel like they kind of missed out on the opportunity to learn from their peers.
Kids need to work in groups, and one of the ways to do that is shared interests. What do your kids like to do? What are their interests?
Videos.
What kind of
My daughter is really interested in tennis, and
well, that's something to do with somebody else.
And then my son is interested in videos, but it's not necessarily watching them. He just likes to inventory them.
Why don't you teach him how to make the videos? Get him a little video camera and some editing software. He's old enough now for that if he's able to read and working at grade level.
Yeah, we can do that. Actually.
And have him make a video of the church picnic, because he's got to learn how to do tasks that other people want. And they're not going to want motorcycle pictures all over the church picnic. You know, he's got to do something that's appropriate. And is he fully verbal?
He is. He struggles some with some language, but he's verbal.
But he may be able to learn how to edit video. A lot of these kids are just fabulous on the computer. But if you don't expose them to it, you don't know whether he can learn it or not. Even with your lower functioning kids, there's some kids that look very low functioning, but they can learn to type independently. And the iPad has worked really well. And the reason why the iPad works well is because when you look at the virtual keyboard, if I type on that virtual keyboard, I can see the words appear right above it. And I can look at the keyboard and look at the words at the same time. Where if I use a laptop, I have to, in order for me to look at the keyboard, and I can't look at the screen. And then I got to nod my head back and forth. And some of those kids can't remember. And that's why the tablet computers really, really work. And even maybe some of the little phones might work.
Yeah, they're good. They're really good with that technology.
But I'd start teaching your son how to edit videos and take videos.
We can do that. We've got
the equipment. I'd rather have him do that than cataloging them.
I know. But what is your thought on the new technology and how it's helped children with autism in the way?
Well, I think the iPad can be helpful, but you have to make sure they're not just stimming off it, that they really are using it. But I've been hearing very good things about the iPad, because there are some individuals that are nonverbal, can learn to type independently, and they kind of have a locked-in syndrome. And then there's others that are really, that's just not going to happen, especially the ones that have severe epilepsy along with the autism.
Yeah. Is there anything that you, in looking back, that you wish you had done earlier, or that you wish you'd really worked harder on earlier?
I wish my math education had been handled differently. The one mistake my science teacher made is he pounded away on algebra, and we should have gone to geometry. But the thing he did right was to take my fixations and use them as a motivation for me to study. Like, I wanted to find out why the squeeze machine was relaxing. And he says, oh, you're going to have to learn how to read scientific journal articles. So he takes me down to the big university library in Boston, and I learned that real scientists don't use Encyclopedia Britannica, or today it would be real scientists don't use Wikipedia. And we had to look at journal articles, and we had no copiers back then. I mean, it was a real hassle. But that got me motivated. You know, take the thing the kids fixated on and use it as a motivation.
Yeah.
And then another thing that was done good with me, my mother had a good sense of stretching me. You know, like when I was 15, I was scared to go to my aunt's ranch. Well, mother wasn't gonna let me not go. She goes, well, you can have a choice, 1 week or all summer. I got out there and I loved it. But if you don't stretch these kids some, they're not gonna go anywhere. You gotta stretch them.
Yeah, we're constantly stretching these kids.
No surprises. You know, if you want to have them go to sleepaway camp, they need to see everything about it up front, maybe visit it beforehand. And you say, well, if you hate it, you can come back after one or two nights. But most of them, once they get out there, they're going to find out they like it.
Yeah.
Temple, I noticed Oliver Sacks wrote in one of his books, and he titled the book after his interview with you, using your own words, An Anthropologist on Mars. Can you explain what that's about and help
what
us to understand?
What that means is, to learn social things, I have to learn it all by just being taught. I don't pick up subtle social cues. I didn't even know that people had all these little secret eye signals until I was 50 years old. Now, obviously, I understood a big smile and I understood crying and laughing. But the more subtle social signs, I just didn't pick that up. And you know, you can't hint with these kids. You've got to be much more direct, and they've got to learn how to act in society, just like you were coaching them for how to act in a different culture of a foreign country. You know, you can say, well, you know, let's say you go to a foreign country. They say, well, in this country, if you put your feet up and show the soles of your feet, that's rude. Well, it doesn't mean anything here. Well, in the Muslim culture, that's considered rude. Well, you see, you have to just teach teach things that most everybody else sort of just learns by osmosis. They have to be specifically taught.
Yeah.
Yes, very helpful. And while you're learning over many years how to socialize with human beings, would you say it came more easily for you with cattle on the farm that summer and beyond?
Well, it became more easy as I got shared interests. I could talk to people about cattle. I could talk to people about optical illusion worlds. I loved sitting around the construction trailer and just talking with the guys on how to build concrete forms and different kinds of snap ties for holding the forms together.
Mm.
I find that kind of stuff very interesting. I go by construction sites. I look at what kind of forming systems they're using. I find stuff like that extremely interesting. I like to sit around and talk to people about animal behavior. You see, it's social interaction through shared interests.
Mm-hmm.
And things like scouting are really good. But you need to make sure that they do a project where they have to cooperate with other people. Don't let them just do all solitary projects. If they're in robotics, then they have a team. And one person makes the computer part and the other person makes the mechanical part. Because they've got to learn how to work with others on a project.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And it's called work groups when you grow up. I'm seeing too many kids today that are overscheduled and they're not doing the informal play groups that we did when we were kids, like get together and you figure out how to build the treehouse. And there's going to be some negotiation. And you can't always get your way.
Yeah,
that's why it's so important for, and, you know, kids these days on the autism spectrum are either homeschooled because their parents just can't tolerate the school systems, or they're in self-contained classrooms. And they're isolated from others, and both.
Well, it's okay to homeschool, but you need to get them out.
Yeah.
Have them go to the church camp.
Yeah.
Get involved with Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts. How about FFA and 4-H? Show an animal in 4-H. There have been some individuals. I just read an article the other day where an autistic kid won grand champion steer at the county fair.
Yeah. Mm.
Get them involved in those activities.
Yeah, absolutely.
Temple, you haven't mentioned the sensory integration dysfunction, the need to wear comfortable clothes, these kind of things. Can you tell us a little about?
The sensory problems are very variable. Some kids have problems with scratchy clothes. And one of the things I had a big problem with at church is we had these horrible scratchy petticoats. Well, you can find things that don't itch. And I have found that some 100% cotton itches and others don't. I went out and bought some beautiful 100% cotton Western dress pants, and I found I couldn't wear them. And then I discovered Old Navy khakis. They're cheap, and they're beautiful and soft, and they're all I wear. They're like $25. They're not very expensive, and they're just so soft. And then for my fancy shirts, I wear T-shirts under them, and they're very well-washed T-shirts.
Mm.
And I do wear some underwear inside out.
So basically,
you can do some adaption, but there's no way you can get wool against my skin. Now, if a kid's got sound sensitivity, what you want to do on that is let the child initiate the sound. Like, I was terrified of balloons. So one of the ways to get over that would be to blow a balloon up just a little bit, take a pin and pop it. Blow it up a little bit more, take a pin and pop it. But I do the popping. So I'm initiating. So it's not a surprise. And you can sometimes desensitize if you let the child have control of the dreaded sound. Let's say it's too much Walmart stimulation. Well, we go in there, and you have a signal. And you've had too much Walmart, then I take you out. But you let the child determine how much Walmart he can tolerate before he has a tantrum or a meltdown.
Temple, what really hit me with the movie was a sense that you've overcome all these obstacles. I can do the same if I have that determination. And I love the way the theme of doors was all through the movie. Is it true as portrayed that you were afraid of going through certain kinds of doors?
Well, I got kind of fascinated yet afraid of sliding glass doors. And some kids love them, other kids hate them. And that sensory, I kind of liked them, but I also was kind of afraid of them. And it had to do with how I reacted to the rapid motion. You see, that's some of the visual things. But you see, I don't think abstractly. So to think about my future when I was very young, I had doors because I couldn't think about something that abstract without having a real door that I could think about.
Yeah. It amazes me to read and think about the way your mind works, because mine is different. I'm not that visual. But
no.
You literally, if I said doors right now, you can probably go through slides in your mind of thousands
of
doors.
That's right. I'm seeing scenes from the movie right now of the doors.
And it's just incredible that your mind can work like that.
I'm also seeing a glass sliding door at the A.J. Bayless supermarket in Arizona,
yeah.
Which was the actual sliding door that was depicted in the movie.
Oh, great.
They used some other market, but...
you have, I would think, a real love for animals and certainly cattle. I like one quote that ends with this, we owe the animal respect.
That's right.
Can you say a word about that?
Well, we're going to use them for food, and half the cattle in the U.S. and Canada go through a center track restrainer system that I designed, and on the titles of the movie, they're the actual mechanical construction drawing for the center track restrainer is in the titles. That they animated my drawing, which I thought was, like, so super cool.
That's incredible.
And this is where they did do a little time compression. They took a project I did in the early 90s, and they pushed it back to the 70s. And they kind of, like, mixed some of the plants together because we wanted to show drawings of stuff that was equipment that people are still using now on some of it. And when I built that piece of equipment, I remember standing up on this catwalk over a sea of cattle, and thinking, and I was kind of upset about designing such an efficient way to kill them. And I got to thinking, none of these cattle would have been born if we hadn't bred them, put the cows and the bulls together and bred them. But we've got to give these animals a life that's worth living, and, you know, we got to treat them really well.
Yeah. Well, we thank you for your example, Temple. I just want to say to you, I know... you're aware you're touching many, many lives, and it's not just children with autism, their parents, their extended family. It is all of us, Temple. I'd like Caroline to give sort of a closing comment here before we close out.
I'm amazed and honored to be here speaking with you and just have a tremendous amount of respect and hope that my children could turn out as well as you.
Well, it's just going to take a lot of hard work. People look for a single magic turning point. There is no magic turning point. It's a whole lot of incremental steps. People tell me my talks at age 60 are better than the ones I did at age 50.
Yeah.
Always keep growing.
Yes. Never stop.
Yeah, that's good for all of us. Temple, thank you so very much for taking time out of your busy schedule. You've truly been a blessing to us.
Well, thank you so much for having me on the show.
Okay. All the best to you, and God bless you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, bye.
We take now just a brief break, and we come back to our amazing journey.
Have you ever wanted to read the entire Bible from cover to cover? Most Christians have, and you may even be among those who have attempted it. Yet only 10% of Christians have ever read the entire Bible. B90, or Bible in 90 Days, is a Bible reading program that can help you achieve this important goal for your life and for your spiritual development. By reading only 12 pages a day, you and your friends, your Bible study group, or even your entire church can read the Bible in 90 days. To find out more about B90, visit us on the web at scriptureawakening.com and click on B90, Bible in 90 Days. Read every word that God has spoken and shared with humanity. Check it out. That's B90 at scriptureawakening.com.
This is Bill Campbell welcoming you back as we take our last few minutes here to continue our amazing journey through the Bible. If you wish to join us, this is a great place to start. We're right now in the book of Exodus, the second half, and for our next week we'll be in Leviticus. The book of Leviticus. The idea is you read through the Bible, I give some comments to inspire you along the way. This helps us to do a read through the whole Bible with understanding, support, and encouragement. I don't know about you, but sometimes as I try to read the whole Bible, I get to a book like Leviticus and I kind of stop right there. You know, it's like, well, how is this relevant for my life? And then the whole journey kind of ends. So we're not going to have that happen. Leviticus has got some of the most amazing truths in it in all the Bible. But right now we're in the second half of Exodus. If the first 20 chapters ended there in chapter 20 with the giving of the law, the last half is about the living of the law. And I'm going to have a step into chapter 32 where we see both the high point, Moses climbs the mountain, Sinai, where he receives, it's a reiteration of what happened with the Ten Commandments, and the low point. The people are down in a valley breaking the first two of the commandments, and then before you know it also doing much worse than that. It says here in chapter 32 that the people saw Moses was so long in coming down from the mountain that they gathered around Aaron and said, come make us gods who will go before us. They wanted something physical, something tangible. And that's our human way, because our bodies are physical and tangible. We want God to be like us. It's true that he made us like him in his image, but he is not confined to a human body. It's true that he came to live in a body through Christ, fully God, fully man, but he would not have us worship the body of Christ or our own body or anything that is created. When we look at the gifts from the Creator and love them more than him, that's called idolatry. And so that was one of the commandments they broke. They would make an idol. What happened? Verse 2, Aaron said, take off the gold earrings on your wives, sons, and daughters. Bring them to me. He took them off, handed it to him, and he cast it into an idol the shape of a calf. Now, that was one of the Egyptian gods, Apis, or one of their Baals. The word Baal meaning Lord or God. And as they worshipped this substitute, we should ask ourselves, what substitutes do we find in our lives? You'll notice as we read on that after worshipping the idol, they began, in a sense, to worship pleasure. They danced around and got involved in revelry, it says here in verse 6. But the idea is there was a sexual orgy. They just did everything that they would enjoy. And so I think we see right now the same kind of idols they had. We think of the actual cow, the calf that was made of gold. But the gold itself represents, I think, materialism. And then their response physically as they got involved in their big party, a pursuit after pleasure or hedonism. And these are two things we deal with in our time and day and age as well. And notice, thirdly, there was a syncretism. That is, the idea of the word syncretism is a mixing of the religion of God and the religion of the world, of church and culture. Aaron, after making the cow, said, behold your God. And literally, he's saying, behold your Yahweh. They were mixing all that they knew about the God in heaven with all that they loved on earth. And don't we tend to do the same? And so Exodus 32 is a good reminder to us. First of all, as we seek cure now for the three idols we mentioned, God gives us the law, the commandments. Not that we might become legalistic with a list of minute rules to follow. That's what the Pharisees did, and Christ said, you're off track. And he constantly tried to correct them, even if he needed to sternly rebuke them. Then the other idea is to ignore the law and act like it's irrelevant for our lives. That's what, in general, the Sadducees did, another party of the Jewish people who were around Christ all the time. They politicized everything. He found need, this Christ, to correct them as well. And he showed a new way. A way that helps us move away from our tendencies from one extreme or the other. If you find yourself gravitating toward rules that motivate you with guilt, that's not of God. If you find yourself resisting the general principles and teachings of the Bible because you want to alleviate guilt, that too is not of God. Those very laws reflect his character and purpose for your life. You see, the law is given to protect us, we're told in Galatians, until we become mature, so mature that we're walking with God in the power of the Spirit. And so instead of finding the extreme of the Pharisee or the avoidance of the Sadducee, what we ought to do is embrace Christ. Remember, he was on a mountain, the Mount Transfiguration. Moses appeared there as well, along with the greatest of the prophets, Elijah. And then there was a cloud of glory that descended. And then the voice, behold my son, listen to him. And that's sort of God's final word. We live, as they did back then, in a time in which we want to avoid the law. If to them Moses was distant up there in the mountain, maybe never coming back, we might say this promise of Christ coming, is it ever going to happen? I just don't know. And God says, but I want you to be faithful. Now we see in this Exodus 32 account, that Moses was told by God, these are a stiff-necked people. let me alone that I might destroy them. I'll make you into a great nation, Moses. In other words, my promise will still be good. I'm just going to start over again. Moses pleaded with God, verse 11 and on. First of all, in terms of God's reputation before the Egyptians. And then he went on and pleaded based on the covenant itself. And Moses' intercession, it says, changed God's mind. Verse 14, God relented. And you ask, what's that mean? Well, it's not as though God is a person, that he moves up and down like the weather and like our emotions, with his decisions being affected by every twist and turn of circumstances. That's not God's way. He's unchangeable, but he's all wise. And as we change, he uses us in our circumstance such that... that we're involved with him in accomplishing his purpose. In other words, God, no doubt, all along would much prefer to carry the people as a whole into the promised land, but it required a man of righteousness like Moses to intercede. Friend, as we are in this culture that tends to mix, even our churches, let's be honest, to mix the teachings of God with the ways of the world, we need people like Moses. People who are willing to call us in the way of righteousness and truth. You see in this account that when Moses came down from the mountain, the Levites, who would eventually become the new priests, Aaron, we can say failed, but the Levites were successful, they brought discipline and 3,000 people died in the camp. That's kind of hard to understand. Get this context. In the book of Acts, Peter preached a sermon, and now whereas the law had been written on stone, it's being written on human hearts, and 3,000 people were saved. This was the day of Pentecost. Rabbis tell us, at least tradition holds this, that Moses received the commandments of God on stone on Pentecost. And so Exodus 32 gives us, when joined with the story in Acts chapter 2 and the whole story of Pentecost, it gives us great hope, doesn't it, that God knows what he's doing. He's able to meet us in this valley of the golden cow, and he's able to forgive us where we fall short and lead us on into victory. So as you continue this journey with me through the Bible, I hope you'll be inspired with the realization that everything in the Old Testament is written for our instruction. That's found in 1 Corinthians 10 with actual allusions and direct references to this chapter, Exodus 32. Well, I want to wish you a great day. Encourage you to tune in with us again next Monday. And I close with this prayer. Lord, we thank you and praise you that you can help us even when we face temptation to compromise. Make us strong with feet founded on the rock who is Christ. Amen.
This has been Beyond Words with Dr. William Campbell. Beyond Words is a ministry of scripture awakening. And if you'd like to help support this ministry, or if you would like to know more about Beyond Words, visit us on our website at scriptureawakening.com.